This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, we're at the end of the line. We're looking over the Golden Gate Bridge, the beautiful San Francisco Bay. Some people may be jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, thinking about this weekend, but maybe not. Welcome to episode 30. Can't believe we've gotten to 30 of your home for everything modern day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. I am your host and soothsayer, Scott Criscolo. We have a awesome show for you tonight because it is our WrestleMania 31 preview, and a very unique preview it is. We are not going to sit here and go, well, the build to this was crap. Well, the build to this was average. Well, the build to this was great. Wouldn't be saying that much tonight anyway, but we're not going to do that tonight. We're going to kind of, but we're going to talk about the weekend and talk about various aspects of it, access and NXT's presence. Ring of Honor, of course, will be having their show Friday night, and Saturday, the Hall of Fame. And then we'll get into the show a little bit, but we got some outside-the-box questions that we're going to lay onto all of you. And we have some awesome people on tonight. Two of the core four are here. JD is out of the country. I think he finally got sent to the gulag. And Mr. Willie is indisposed with work this evening as well. So you guys are missed, as always. But we have two of the core four. We begin with the Boogie of the Bayou. Always dependable, always reliable, never duplicated. Mr. Andrew Reich.
I think the Main Event and WrestleMania have one thing in common, and that's that we know number 30 will not nearly be as good as number 31.
Possibly. It's quite true. But Boogie, it's always good to have you on, man. Thank you. Wow, my God. Let me hit that on mute. Okay. And this other guy, I don't know who he is. Voice, name is unrecognizable. I think he won a contest to join us. No. He has been indisposed the last couple of shows. But he still is my favorite person on the planet. He is the purveyor. He is a contributor to PlaceMeNation.com, the purveyor of Marvel.com. I've never been. It's always a pleasure when I get to say his name so fast that nobody can understand it. But welcome back, Mr. Ben Morrison.
Yeah, I'm glad to be making another recurring appearance. I think I'm the guest on this show with the most appearances, so, you know, keeping that record up. I've missed you guys. Jordan and Steve look different, but it seems to still be the same show, so glad to be back, Scott.
You don't get the Brock Lesnar deal, though. You do know that, right?
Yeah, I get re-signed for another 3 years at $90 million.
And show
for more
up,
money and less dates.
And show up three times.
Yeah, that's the plan.
We'll talk about that as part of tonight as well. But, Benjamin, you know it's always good to have you back. So, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We have two special guests. One making his debut, and I'm stoked about this. And Ben can bring him in, but we'll get to him in a minute. Let's bring back another guy who has been on the Main Event before, one of my favorite people. He is a recurring host on many shows on the PWO PTB Network. He also, of course, is the host of our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as he's been doing some other reaction shows. New Japan, I think he did Ring of Honor a while back.
Yeah, I did Ring of Honor.
Yeah. Will H. What's up, Will?
What's up, buddy? I'm excited to be here, man. I got a lot to say about this show.
So. I think a lot of people have a lot to say about this show.
But not about the build, man. I don't care about that. I want to jump in and hear these questions you're going to ask us.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
It's going to be very different, because nobody wants to talk about the builds.
I got to think on my toes tonight.
Yes.
Man. I got to be sharp.
Yes. It's kind of like Sorrow's game show, only essay questions.
Oh yeah.
And no whiskey shots. Damn. I knew I forgot something. Anyway, Will, man, it's awesome to have you on as always.
Oh, I'm excited, man. I'm excited.
And Benjamin, I'm giving you the honor. You're going to do a little work tonight since you haven't been on in eons. Please introduce our very special debuting guest tonight.
It's an absolute pleasure for me. This is a dude who, when I started at Marvel back in, 2007, he was editing books like Blade and Ant-Man and X-Factor, and then he left to go work at WWE for a bit. and then he ended up at 2K for a little bit. Now he's out on the West Coast. He's a California boy, but he is the host of the massively successful and popular video blog. I don't know what you call it. Videocast? Straight Shoot. It's on every Monday and then has other shows on Wednesdays and other times. And is launching a new endeavor that I know he wants to talk about, but that is my good friend, my good close personal friend, Aubrey Sitters.
Very personal. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I'm stoked to be here. I got a question, though, before we get into all my plugs and stuff.
Oh, go right ahead.
Scott, do you always open with suicide anecdotes, or is this like a special WrestleMania thing?
Because this is a WrestleMania where a lot of people may want to kill themselves if they watch it.
I like that. No. Listen, there are a lot of wrestling podcasts out there. I feel like you need something to set yourself apart. Opening grim is really smart because you can only go up from there.
Yeah. Well, you'd be surprised, Aubrey.
I think it's really great. We can get darker.
We can
Aubrey.
Get darker, man.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks so much. Honestly, I'm really excited because I call it a talk show because it's on YouTube, but it's also on, on podcast platforms called Straight Shoot. It's a panel talk show, but we go live right after Raw. And so I'm responsible for keeping the conversation moving, building the run of shows, asking questions, stuff like that. So I'm thrilled to be here to answer your questions. I can just kind of relax and kick back. I'm stoked.
It's going to be a blast, and I've been looking forward to this for the last couple weeks because, yes, Raw has been fairly dreadful. I mean, let me rephrase that. The show itself has had some good moments and some bad moments the last month, but the builds to this WrestleMania have left quite a bit to be desired. But we're going to talk about a lot of stuff tonight pertaining to the weekend. Ring of Honor, of course, has their show Friday night somewhere in the woods in Big Sur or whatever the heck it is. But it's good that they're having a show as always. Obviously, Access, the Hall of Fame, which I think is going to be like 11 hours on Saturday. and of course, WrestleMania 31 Sunday live from Levi Stadium in Santa Clara, home of the Niners. All right. First things first, Hall of Fame. It's a gigantic class. Now, I don't have them in front of me, so I'm going to try and remember them off the top of my head. We, of course, have the Macho Man Randy Savage as the headliner. God rest his soul. He's the man. Kevin Nash, Big Daddy Cool. I think he's going in as his real name, not as Diesel, unlike Scott Hall, who technically went in as Razor Ramon. Let's see.
They did call him Diesel on Raw when they announced it.
Yeah, I think when the graphic came up, I think it said Kevin Nash. So
the graphic said Kevin Nash. They just kept referring to him as Diesel in the video package.
Alundra Blaze. They did not call her Medusa. Who else? Another one that passed away.
Bushwhackers.
Oh, the Bushwhackers. Well, their careers. Event passed away, but no. Yes, the Bushwhackers shocked everybody.
Some people wish they did.
And you got Arnold. You got Tatsumi Fujinami.
Tatsumi Fujinami.
Rikishi.
I don't think there's any other dead people.
Fujinami's alive. They're all dead inside.
Yeah.
Larry Zbysko.
Larry Legend. Yes. No. All right. Here's the. Okay, so it was the class.
The one who passed away was the Warrior Award for that Connor kid.
Yes. Connor the Crusher. I want to make sure I get his name right. Mihalik. So here it is. Randy Savage, inducted by Hulk Hogan. Yeah, there's an irony there. Arnold Schwarzenegger, be inducted by Triple H. Rikishi will be inducted by his kids, the Usos. The Bushwhackers will be inducted by me. I'm only kidding. I'm sure Johnny Ace.
It's Johnny Ace, yeah.
Probably induct him. Alundra Blaze to be inducted by, not sure yet.
A trash can.
Who's a good pick? Yeah, no, really, trash cans.
Aja Kong. Aja Kong is the pick, man.
Eric Bischoff.
Or Bull Naka Naka No.
Eric Bischoff worked with her in the AWA and WCW.
That is true. That is true.
I would pine for Evan Courageous.
It'd be cool to bring out Paige or AJ or somebody like that to induct her.
Yeah,
as well.
Someone who looked up to her. That's the route to go.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll probably take somebody from the current. Anybody but the Bellas. That would make no sense. They don't probably know who she is. As we said, Larry Zbysko.
Hey, you guys don't like stuff on this show, huh?
That's just Scott.
You guys don't like the Bushwhackers. You don't like Hulk Hogan inducted Macho Man. You don't like the Bellas.
Oh, no, we love Macho Man. No, we love Macho Man. It's just the
Aubrey, you don't like Hulk inducting.
Yeah,
I love all of them too, man.
I know. That's why I had to bring you in. I needed backup.
Ben, why didn't you give him the syllabus? He's supposed to know all these things.
We hate everything.
He knows I hate.
That's on the syllabus right at the top.
You know, he's supposed to know I hate the Blackers. No. Larry Zbysko. We love Larry Legend. Love Larry Land. He's inducted. He's being inducted by Bruno Sammartino, which is pretty cool. Tatsumi Fujinami's being inducted by Flair, which is pretty cool.
When did they announce Fujinami?
Fujinami was like, he was like announced on SmackDown on the website, but they never actually did it on
Raw.
And then,
Raw, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. When they showed the Diesel video this weekend, he was just there in the background.
Yeah.
He was all the way to the left.
All the way to the left. Random Japanese guy.
And then Kevin Nash, being inducted by Shawn Michaels, which means for the second straight year we'll get a sweet.
It's not Mick Foley as rumored on Twitter.
That was. Yeah. I don't know what that was about. Which means we'll get a sweet Click reunion for the second year in a row. And of course, Daniel Bryan and the Ultimate Warriors widow Dana will induct Connor Mihalik, the Crusher, for the Warrior Award, which is pretty awesome. And there was some real here's more negativity, but this is legit negativity, Aubrey. There were some real pieces of crap that were like, I forgot what the guy's name was on Twitter, who goes, "Oh, good." We're like when that was announced, literally his tweet came up 10 seconds later. Great. There's an inductee that I can go to the bathroom during. That was nice. That was classy. Yeah. Stay classy, San Diego. Overall thoughts on the class itself. Will, I'll start with you. What do you think of the class?
Man, you know what? I don't have a problem with it at all, to be honest with you. I think Larry Zbysko is deserving. I figured if you're going to put Razor Ramon in there, Diesel's as good as anybody. You know, Macho Man finally gets in. If you look at the Bushwhackers beyond just being the Bushwhackers and go back to when they were the Sheep Herders,
hell yeah,
absolutely deserve to be.
Hell yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And those guys are older than dirt too, man. I didn't realize they were old in the 80s.
I think even if you I don't even think you have to go back to the Sheep Herders to justify the Bushwhackers.
In the WWF Hall of Fame, but I'm just saying that if you look at them just as the Bushwhackers, okay, that's your Coco Beware entry.
Those guys were massively over, though. You know what I'm saying? They were humongous. They were just below Hogan in terms of what people wanted to see when they went to these shows. You watch those. Well, you watch old footage on the network. People do it. Everyone in the audience.
Yeah, but that's more like Pavlov's dog response.
Yeah, it was nauseating.
Okay, so my only thing, that's any extreme. You can say the same thing about Yes Chance. Oh, people are just doing it because they like doing the chant. They don't really like Daniel Bryan.
Except
I think it's nonsense in both places.
They only do it. Enthusiastically when Brian's announced or actually there. Because, I mean, they tried to farm that out to Big Show, didn't get over.
And how many times did people do
wife, didn't get over.
How many times did people do the Bushwhacker walk without the Bushwhackers? That never happened, right?
I don't like the
backhanded compliments that it's not just you guys. Everyone on the internet gives the Bushwhackers. Those guys were massive. They were people on the internet tend to forget that kids like wrestling. They like it a lot. And
you know,
love the Bushwhackers.
I agree with you.
What I'm saying though is that as a Hall of Fame group, right? We're not talking popularity or Bon Jovi would be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right? We're talking, you know, from a critical aspect, the Bushwhackers don't have enough meat there to get in the Hall of Fame. But you had the Sheep Herder career, they absolutely do.
I think there's different rubrics, man. It's not when you're saying critical, it's not like, all right, everyone in the Hall of Fame had to have this incredible body of in-ring wrestling work. I think there's something to be said for what Aubrey's saying, where it's success. Who are the biggest stars? And that was a huge era for WWF, you know, coming in late 80s, early 90s. And there was no, probably if you're looking at stuff like who made the most money merchandise sales, like what other tag teams sold shirts? The Bushwhackers had shirts. They were selling huge. You didn't see a lot of people buying like Demolition and Heart Foundation merch, no offense to those guys, but the Bushwhackers are stars, dude. And then when you factor in all the other stuff you're saying, like, yeah, they had a huge career, they had, you know, great matches in the territories and stuff like that, but there's something to be said for you go in the Hall of Fame if you were a success, and those guys were undeniably a success.
Right.
Wait a minute, hold on. You're telling me that Demolition didn't have their own little S&M store going on?
They definitely had Demolition shirts.
It wasn't officially licensed.
Yeah.
Okay. It was under table. Too. Okay,
yeah, it was like Rob Halford, you know.
But I will say
on what
this.
Ben is saying,
I didn't think the thing that people always do with Bushwhackers.
I think it's this larger issue, right? People look at the WWE Hall of Fame and they talk about it as if it's the Baseball Hall of Fame, where you can look at these objective metrics and say, oh, well, this guy had this level of career. And you can objectively say that one baseball player had – I don't know baseball, so I should have picked a better example. But one baseball player had a better career than the other one. And wrestling is fixed. It's all fixed.
I don't look at it like the Baseball Hall of Fame. I look at like – the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is completely arbitrary, just like this.
Here's my thing.
You know, like, why isn't Motorhead in when they've influenced, you know, thousands of bands, right? Or why isn't Bon Jovi, who sold more records than Dirt in, or Tommy James, who had more top 10 hits in the 60s than anyone that isn't in that Hall of Fame? You know, it's completely arbitrary.
I like Bon Jovi.
Well, let me
get out.
or why Madonna got in before Rush, but anyway. Let me.
I think that's for his rushes for nerds.
Something for art.
Rushes for Canadians.
I was going to say we're five guys talking about wrestling on the internet. We're fucking nerds, guys. Sorry to break it to
you. Let me clarify something about the Bushwhackers, though. In a global sense, Ben and Aubrey, you're absolutely right. Will and I think, are taking it. I don't say personally, but a little more within our own specific tastes, because we knew what the Bushwhackers were before WWE. The Sheepherders were one of the coolest heel tag teams in the history of the NWA, AWA, wherever they were, all over the country.
Blood and guts, baby.
Blood and guts. They come to the WWF and Vince ruined them. Now, that's different from, say, Strikeforce.
How many orders of magnitude more money did they make as the Bushwhackers than the Sheepherders? How can you honestly say that he ruined the sheepherders when the Bushwhackers are so much more successful?
I think Aubrey has a point. Like, if they were a heel New Zealand tag team, I don't think that would have gotten over.
Wait, hold on. I'm serious about this, because me and Scott, we're 40 plus. How old are you guys? And I don't know. I don't know.
I'm Ben, 31. How,
31. Okay, Ben, how old are you?
32.
And Reach.
Wait, no, I'm 33. Oh shit.
Eesh, I'm sorry.
Reach. Right. She's 18.
I'm 14 going on 25.
So 25, right?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, it's an age thing, guys. It's you know, Scott and I grew up with the territories. Like, you know, we experienced that. Like, I experienced watching world-class UWF, WWF, Crockett, and, you know, like, probably AWA all in the same week. You know, so I saw guys like that. You know, I saw, you know, like when Demolition came out, just speak of another tag team we mentioned earlier, I knew right away, oh man, that's Crusher Khrushchev. You know, right. It's like, so this is an age thing. This isn't Attack of the Bushwhackers. You're right. They're more popular in the WWF than they ever were bleeding blood and guts against the Fantastics in UWF.
I understand the emotion of, I grew up with these guys and I felt betrayed when they got, you know, whitewashed in the WWF. Because certainly, like, even though we weren't necessarily around the territory days, like, you know, we saw that when guys came over from NWA, from WCW, stuff like that. But I think, you know, Vince changed my team that I liked on a personal level, which is totally fine. It's a reasonable reaction. And they don't belong in the Hall of Fame. Those are two very different.
I definitely think they belong in the Hall of Fame. This is just me hating them. It's got nothing to do with whether they belong or not. I just can't stand it.
Yeah, I even said I thought they belonged in the Hall of Fame.
No, Will and I agree. I think
the caveat that, you know, you're acknowledging their Sheepherders career, which they're definitely going to do at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know,
if they came out with a barbed wire New Zealand flag, that'd be sweet. But and that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, and you know, to me, like Larry Zbysko absolutely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, for his popularity. I mean, he was a bust as an AWA champion.
Yeah, I will say this. I will say
that one angle, though, that one angle with Bruno should get him in. You know?
Well, that too. But sure. I think the newer fans, I think the AWA thing in late 89, 90 is almost like a black hole. I think the two things that put him in the hall are the feud with Bruno, clearly, and when he was in the Dangerous Alliance. I think those were the two things. Because
I would actually say as Nitro announcer.
And Nitro announcer.
I agree
Nitro
with Will. I mean, he was the voice of the brand for a while. He wasn't the primary lead announcer, but he was a guy.
No, he was like the first hour guy with Tony.
When are we getting Tony Schiavone?
Hey, no
thank
joke.
You.
That's what I want.
When
most underrated announcer of all time.
When Ole Anderson gets in, and who knows when the hell that'll happen.
No, Tony will get in at some point. He's on all the DVDs. He'll be fine.
Yeah, he probably will be.
I'll tell you what, we mentioned Fujinami, and this last thing I want to say, because I don't want to take over this part of the show. But if you look at it from an in-ring standpoint, from drawing money standpoint, the guy that they kind of slipped in, under the radar, Fujinami, is undoubtedly the biggest Hall of Famer here, including the Macho Man. Like when you look at both, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so I'm excited, man. Fujinami is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I hope you guys have a chance to get New Japan World, the New Japan version of the network, and just check out some old Fujinami matches. You always hear Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid, we're putting on this revolutionary stuff. And that would be true if Fujinami wasn't right there kind of doing it before them or at the same time. Mm. And then Fujinami is one of the rare guys who actually went from a junior who was at the top of his game, kind of like the top junior of the time, to a heavyweight and was like the top heavyweight of his time. Mm. So Fujinami's really a guy that I hope you guys have.
You think he's a bigger name and draw than Macho Man Randy Savage?
Equivalent in Japan, maybe not. I mean, who knows? I'm just saying, like, when you take his wrestling stuff, like the artsy fartsy match of the year stuff, and combine it with how much he drew, you know what I mean? No, Macho Man is, I mean, the voice, the Slim Jim commercials,
he's a pop culture. He's a worldwide pop culture icon.
Yeah. But I'm talking about the other stuff.
Let me ask you this: does anybody think? And I'm not. Don't get mad, Will. I'm not downplaying this by any stretch. Does anybody think the Fujinami pick is a business move?
I can't figure it out.
How does it benefit him business wise?
Yeah, maybe they'd be cozying up to.
Maybe WWE wants to hone in on I don't know. Is Fujinami connected to anything? No.
Japanese right now, is he? Press,
no.
Maybe?
Not New Japan or any of that kind of stuff. No.
Yeah.
I don't know, because Inoki clearly felt that way, right? Like it was kind of like he's well deserving. Inoki's
right.
That's a pop icon.
But
there.
Even then, he didn't have anything to offer because he wasn't even with New Japan anymore at that point.
Right. Right.
Even the Genome Federation.
If Baba
stuff.
Was still alive, Baba probably had more to offer, really. But
I think with the Japanese inductions, I think this is a positive move. I don't think it's so much a business thing as they're branching out and putting an international guy in every year.
That's probably what it is, which
I think is nice. I think certainly, listen, like if they can do a little double dealing and, induct Carlos Colon and also get some Puerto Rico tape, sure, they're going to do it. But right. I don't think they're going to be like, all right, there's no one who has any tapes this year, like no international induction. I think they just, Fujinami's a big star, like Will said, and they wanted to add to the wings. The thing I like that they're doing now is they're building wings, basically. Like every year, there's going to be a tag team, there's going to be a female talent, there's going to be an international star. I like that they're celebrity.
Good point.
I like that they're doing that because it diversifies. It's not
Who's the celebrity this year?
Arnold.
Right.
Yeah.
So, all right.
But I like that because it's not just, it's not the days of when they were first starting. And this also, it speaks to necessity because when they had no one in the Hall of Fame, they could fill it with anyone. But it's not just, here are 10 guys who were big in the 80s. They're spreading it around. I think that's good. And I think that's good with the network, too.
I agree. One more thing about the Hall of Fame, then we'll move on. Connor getting in the Warrior Award is awesome. The kid deserved it. I mean, what he went through, and he had his big moment last year, and he deserved it, and the family loved it, and it'll be good to see it. But I don't know how they go from there. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm curious to see who next year's recipient is.
You mean with the Warrior Award recipient?
Yeah, next year's Warrior Award recipient.
Yeah, that was kind of my first or second thought,
Susan G. Komen next year. I think it's already been determined.
Oh, her specifically? Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Well, it's like the Jimmy V Award for the ESPYs. I mean, you've got to have somebody win it, and some are... they'll pull out the emotional strings a little harder than the others will.
Yeah. Okay.
But, let me ask, can I ask somebody? Can I ask the panel a
question? Sure, go ahead, Will.
Because when Warrior made a speech last year, he intended for an award to be given to guys behind the scenes.
Yeah, this was not, I don't think this is what he intended.
This is not at all what they intended. This was a way to kind of honor his memory by doing something cool. And I'm cool with that. I wish they wouldn't have edited the video, because to me that's what seemed so fake about the situation, was editing what he said and what he meant to serve their purposes this year. Like, it's like you take this special moment with this Connor kid, and man, you know, I get choked up at those videos, and it takes a lot to choke me up. I'm not a crybaby.
Yeah,
I just don't. I don't have emotions.
You have a black heart.
I do. I really do, man. Even I get
like Owen
sad.
Hunt, the black heart.
Like the Bushwhackers.
Yeah, I get. I love the Bushwhackers as the sheep herders. You know, but I just wish that they would have just said Warrior died right after the Hall of Fame. This is how we're going to honor him, by naming this the Warrior Award, instead of trying to make it act like Warrior created this award. You know, it really bugged me, man. I mean, but I like the idea that this kid's getting honored.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. But that's semantics. It's a great class. All right. So there's your Hall of Fame, and it'll probably be a billion hours. Because, I mean, last year ended. I mean, of course, Mr. T, I think, is still talking. That one ended like at, Christ, 5 after 12 at night or something. So God knows how long this one will be.
It's the West Coast, man. They can go all night.
Exactly. Woo-hoo! That's the beauty.
Okay. Let's get to our roundtable questions. And this pertains to matches, feuds, you know, what ifs, everything. And I want to thank Ben for this idea, because he kind of came up with it. Because it's better than picking a match and either ripping it or praising it or whatever. Wanted something a little different, because this WrestleMania is kind of tough to put your, you know, wrap your head around. Either A, because you can't stand what's going on, or B, because you don't care. And there's a lot of apathy towards this card. So, all right, question number one. And I want to thank Steve Willey. I know he's not here tonight, but Steve came up with a lot of these questions too. I'm going to go around the horn. I'm going to randomly pick, so just be ready. And Aubrey goes first.
Yeah.
What match will have the most repercussion Which of the matches Sunday will have the most repercussions for the next 6 months of storylines?
It's got to be Lesnar Reigns, I think. It has to be, right? I think that too. I mean, are we going to talk about Lesnar stuff separately, or can I launch into that now? Don't do that separately.
You can fold it in. We all know that he's staying and he resigned.
Yeah,
fine. So go ahead.
I mean, this is the fact that Lesnar is staying makes me aprox 1,000 times more excited for this match and WrestleMania as a whole, because now I legitimately don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Before, it felt like a foregone conclusion that this was Roman Reigns' coming out party. They were building up to it, and he's going to finally beat Roman Reigns and send him off in the sunset. And the fact that he's not going off in the sunset, and I could see it going either way, is fascinating and really, really exciting to me, because either way, I think it's win-win. You know, I know people here, or at least listening, are probably going to groan at this, but I don't mind Roman Reigns winning. I don't mind Roman Reigns becoming WWE World Heavyweight Champion. In fact, I like it. I like it whenever a big promotion like WWE puts all of the power of their machinery behind making a guy and pushing him. So I would love it if Roman Reigns won. I would love it if Brock Lesnar won. If Brock Lesnar doesn't win, now we've got Brock Lesnar as this Andre the Giant-esque attraction figure. So he doesn't even need the title for competing against him to have meaning. I think that's fantastic. So coming out, I mean, I hope Roman Reigns wins, actually, because that means you have two massive MacGuffins, basically, to build future matches around. And that's – I mean, I think that's – that if Brock does lose, those are the two main events of every pay-per-view for like the next 6 or 8 months. It's Roman defending the title, or maybe Seth, depending on whether he cashes in soon or not, and Brock just being Brock and just killing people.
Reesh, any adding to that? Or do you have your own theory?
Yeah, I'll play the contrarian just for the sake of debate, and I'll say it's actually Sting and Triple H, because the thing with Lesnar is that even though we had this 11th hour news that he signed a new deal and he's going to be sticking around for future storylines, usually the protocol with Brock is that after WrestleMania, or maybe for the pay-per-view after that, he takes about another 4 to 5 months off and comes back for SummerSlam. Sting, I think, will stick around for another couple of months, you know, whether it be the pay-per-view after that or maybe in the month of May or June. So I think that when we're talking about lasting power in terms of
how much impact a match will have on the storylines going forward. I think the one between Triple H and Sting might hold the most significance in the short term because Triple H is always around all the storylines. And if he's still embroiled in a rivalry with Sting, then that one will last a little longer. With Lesnar and Reigns, it might be one of those things where it happens and then we get a whole lot of nothing for another 4 months. But we don't really know yet. WWE hasn't tipped their hat yet.
Yeah, no, the rumor, according to Dave Meltzer, was that they were going to do a Roman Reigns Big Show program after Mania.
So, yeah, we're not exactly sure. So I'll just go with Sting. Triple H.
Okay. Next question. And, Will, you get this one. Do post-WrestleMania NXT call-ups even matter anymore? Now that Sami Zayn, Lucha Dragons, and Charlotte have all had matches, even if it's on Superstars or Main Event?
I think it depends entirely on how they're going to push them. If you say the guy's name is Rusev, yeah, it matters. Mm-hmm. If you say the guy's name is Adam Rose, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, he was dead in the water. The minute Vince McMahon decided this guy wasn't worth pushing, he was dead. Became a comedy figure. Mm-hmm. The minute they decided Bo Dallas wasn't worth their time, he was dead in the water.
Told you, Ben.
You know, however, my man Rusev, mm-hmm. you know, got over one of the biggest heels the company has right now. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the answer to your last question is John Cena, Rusev. That's where you see where this company's going in the next 6 months. Do they continue to push Rusev as the monster on his way up, or do they go the safe route and let Cena win one for USA? Mm. So I think it's entirely dependent upon how Vince sees him, you know, mm-hmm. right out of the gate. Ascension was huge in NXT for, 2 years? And then they're a joke. I'm surprised that they were even allowed in the Andre Battle Royal.
I think WWE ruined the Ascension, personally. But you
see where I'm coming
from.
No, right?
Definitely. Absolutely.
Unless the company decides these guys are players, I don't think it matters if it's the day after Mania or 2 days after Mania or 2 months or 6 months. You know, I think it's all on how they're going to respect that person as a wrestler and his character.
All right. Ben, any additional comments, your own theory? What do you think?
Yeah, I think Will's right in a sense. I think that the difference between wrestling on Superstars like the Lucha Dragons are, or making a one-off appearance like Charlotte is they're not on the main roster radar yet, which means they're not subject to main roster scrutiny. And I'm not going to generalize. I know a lot of people say like, oh, Vince ruins everything. Vince does this. Like, I'm not privy to behind the scenes, but there's no question that when someone goes from being an NXT performer who makes the occasional main event appearance to being on Raw on a weekly basis, they get handled by, you know, a different team and a different group who's pushing them. And yeah, we have seen a lot of the NXT folks flop because they haven't been handled the same way. So I think, yeah, getting a call up from NXT full time, you're going to be on the road with WWE, you're going to be on Raw, you're going to be in the spotlight and you're not being, you know, necessarily shielded by the NXT booking team anymore. We're going to see how you succeed as an act. And also, you know, getting used to, you might not be able to go out and work a 10-minute NXT match anymore. You got to go out there and make the most out of 3 minutes, which you listen to a lot of wrestlers. That's the hardest thing to do mm-hmm. is how do you make a 3-minute Raw match matter? And a lot of people just instantly write off as like, oh, these guys are on for 3 minutes. They don't have a shot. They're buried. No, there's an art to it. The people who can make it work are the people who end up, you know, being stars, the people who can take even the 2 minutes of screen time they get and really make it sing and don't get frustrated. That's what's going to make a difference. So, yes, getting called up to the main roster absolutely makes a difference.
So, hold on. You're saying the guy who gets beaten 3 minutes can make the most of it?
Absolutely, man. I think it
makes it look like a jobber to me.
Well, I think if you're...
And that's a bad... That's only if it's a bad match. He's only a jobber if it's a job match. Yeah. And
I remember when Dolph Ziggler debuted and he wrestled Batista. He jobbed out in about 2 minutes, but he looked good doing it.
Yep. Yeah. And that's what we remember
him for. I think you said the same thing about Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan lost a lot of quick matches.
I think the first example of that was the Blue Blazer and Mr. Perfect at WrestleMania 5. They wrestled 5 minutes and 10 seconds, and that was better than anything else on that card.
Yeah.
Except maybe Savage Hogan to a certain extent, but the rest of that undercard was pretty trashy.
You get 15 minutes, you can tell a story a lot easier than if you get 3 minutes. You get 3 minutes and you're going to get buried. I'm not saying, you know, everyone should get buried, and I don't believe in that whole you know, you have to pay your dues, old school, et cetera. But at the same time, there's definitely an art to making it work. And the guys who are experts can do it. They can go out there and look great losing in 3 minutes and show the powers that be, hey, there's something here. All right, next week you get 5 minutes. Next week you get to win.
Yeah, and then there's – oh, go ahead, Aubrey.
I think the crucial difference between – you know, these sort of one-off NXT appearances, you know, Charlotte popping up and facing Natty or whatever, you know, Lucha Dragons, and an actual call-up, and why the call-up itself still matters is when you get called up these days in WWE, you've got a story waiting for you. It didn't used to be that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like back in like 2008, 2009, they would just bring Kazarni up and like have him job and be like, oh, it didn't work, and he's gone, right? Same thing with Colt Cabana, Scotty Goldman or whatever. That was how they did things back then, and it's not the case anymore. When they bring folks up, even if it's a story that ultimately doesn't go anywhere, like Adam Rose or The Ascension or Bo Dallas, those guys did have a story, which is a lot more than what folks had just 5 or 7 years ago. So I think, yeah, the call-up itself still matters a lot.
Yeah, and speaking of what Aubrey is saying, I think the call-up matters more than it really has in the past, like, few years, because the thing with NXT is we had the previous territories like of Ohio Valley and FCW, but those were syndicated. We didn't really get to see a lot of that. So when somebody got called up, there was always rumblings that this guy was good or that guy was good. But if they had a bad storyline or a bad character, people just kind of threw it off because they didn't really see their best stuff when they were, you know, coming up. With NXT, we've seen the best of these people, and we know the ones that are good. You know, we know that Sami Zayn can wrestle. We know Kevin Owens can wrestle. We know that Finn Balor's amazing. So if he gets called up and creative screws it up, it's creative's fault because now you've seen their best and you didn't handle it correctly.
Mm. Okay. Excellent. That's good. I like everybody's opinions. I kind of lean towards a little what Will said. I think it all comes down to the individual person and what they do with it. Adam Rose could have been good, but when you do the same thing over and over, the problem with Adam Rose was it was nice to have 10 Rosebuds in a 400-seat arena. And I said this many times, and the guys, the regulars know this. I've said it before.
Right.
It was one thing to have 10 Rosebuds in a 400-seat arena. It's another thing to have 10 Rosebuds in a 20,000-seat arena. It looked dumb. He should have had 50 Rosebuds, and maybe it would have looked a little cooler.
Yeah, the biggest tragedy that I can think of was Emma. You know, Emma got over doing a very niche thing in NXT, mm-hmm. but they had developed that character over months.
Right.
And then they tell her, go out there and do your stupid dance and it's going to get over. And it never got over.
Yeah.
You know,
it worked a little bit with Santino. When she was with Santino,
very little,
it was
though, man.
Okay. But it,
yeah, but the NXT atmosphere and the WWE, they're so different.
That's definitely different.
That's something where Emma, it's like Blue Pants. Like if you put Blue Pants out there in WWE, that will fail in a hurry.
But what I'm saying, though, is that that's why it's up for creative to recognize that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And I agree with
get them
that.
To do the exact same thing with Adam Rose. Yeah, it looked cool doing – I thought the vignettes were good. I thought they should have stuck with the vignettes and that if they were going to do the party people, after Adam Rose wins a match, he leaves the arena. They show him going back to the party bus, and then everybody's crammed in the bus. Don't bring him out to the arena where they look like a bunch of goose just twiddling their thumbs at ringside.
It's such a small bunch. Yeah, I agree.
But you can make a small bunch look really crowded on a tour bus. Mm. You know,
I think Reese hit the nail on the head. It's just that WWE – I mean, and this is like an ongoing thing whenever you talk about WWE is just how fractured the audience has become.
Yep.
And it's not a bad thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's just difficult because Raw is still expected to be the big tent that appeals to everybody. And you're not going to like every segment because every segment isn't for you. NXT, meanwhile, is only an hour. And if you're the type of fan who's tuning in to watch the developmental territory of WWE, yeah, pretty much every segment is for you. So stuff that works in NXT, and again, especially because they're performing in front of that same audience every week, it becomes insular and it becomes weird and wacky and self-referential. I don't know. I don't envy WWE creative in the respect that they have to take these talents and these gimmicks they've developed in kind of a weird little petri dish and then find a way to adapt that to a larger audience. You know, Rusev, because I guess the Wyatt family was the Wyatt family, but NXT wasn't really NXT, the NXT it is now.
Oh, right, exactly.
You know, like the only guy who had a run in NXT with the same gimmick and then got brought up to the main roster and found success with it, that's Rusev, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, he was at FCW too before that. I mean, Really, anybody who's been brought up, they're all from FCW slash.
Yeah, I'm not disputing that. But I mean, but what I'm saying, though, is, you know, Emma, like the Shield guys were successful, but they got a new gimmick when they came in. They weren't the Shield down in NXT, right?
Right.
The Wyatts were successful, but NXT was still kind of in its nascent stages at that point. It's not the NXT. It was only on Hulu. It wasn't on the it wasn't network stuff. Rusev came up as Rusev whole cloth and found success, which is something that Bo Dallas, Emma, Adam Rose. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like these other folks who came up whole cloth weren't able to do. I think it speaks to the immense talents of Rusev, honestly.
Actually, I want to add to that is it's also wrestling, and the reason Rusev works is because they didn't really overthink of it. Evil Foreigner, how fucking hard is that with a hot chick? Yep. It's not rocket science, you know. It's wrestling. You get someone to insult America, he's gonna get heat. Then you have him beat everybody. Oh, by the way, wins and losses kind of matter. You know, you don't want a guy being pinned every week because when that happens, they lose their heat. Rusev's still to this day not pinned. And he's over. I mean, this thing with Cena is huge, man. Hmm. I mean, it's the one thing on the show I'm like genuinely excited about because I want to see them. So I think they overthink it, you know, a lot of the times. Like, you know, just have a guy go out there and insult people. I mean, sometimes that's the best. Hey, that guy's an asshole. I don't like him. I'm going to boo him. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, simplicity is the best solution.
Excellent.
Anyway, sorry.
No, that was awesome. No, good stuff so far, guys. All right, Rich, I'm giving you this one because this is about your boy. If Sting is gone after Sunday, regardless win or lose, he's probably going to win. But if he's gone after Sunday, was it worth bringing him in?
Yes, because of just this pure nostalgia of having Sting wrestle for the first time in a WWE match and wrestle even for the only one time at WrestleMania. At least you have that one snapshot of Sting, and he does bring in the fans. I felt like on that Go Home Raw where he opened up in Los Angeles that the crowd was really feeding off of him big time. I didn't feel like it was kind of like a sympathy cheer, like, yay, we love Sting, I guess we'll cheer him. I felt like they were really rooting him on in that opening segment, and I think the fans, I don't want to say that fans are going to WrestleMania just to see Sting, but I think there is a very small percentage there that really is just kind of interested to see how Sting does in the ring. So if that generates just enough extra buzz for them, then yeah, it was worth it.
Okay. Aubrey, any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, of course bringing in Sting is worth it. I mean, Sting was one of the, you know, I grew up in the South too, so I recognize that it's different, but Sting was massive. Sting was absolutely huge. And WWE, because they are they're not just the biggest wrestling promotion in the world, they're the caretaker of wrestling history right now. So Sting coming in is important and monumental and fantastic, not just because he's a great talent. And man, he was great on the microphone on Monday. And yeah. I think I might be in the minority here too, but I think he and Triple H are going to have a great match. I don't think it's going to be, you know, a technical mat wrestling clinic, but I don't think it should be, honestly, those guys' age and their background and everything. But it's also significant from the standpoint of WWE kind of reclaiming this part of WCW history that they had kind of been hands off with for a large degree because of his association with TNA. So no, I think this is massive and it's huge news. And I do think that a lot of people are going, you know, maybe not going to WrestleMania to see Sting because that's a certain type of hardcore fan. But again, I mean, and this is something I think we'll probably bring up a number of times too. WrestleMania, and this is truly why I think so many people on the internet are so dissatisfied with WrestleMania's build, is that WrestleMania isn't marketed for you. WrestleMania is marketed for casual fans. So yeah, Sting, the guy that we used to love back in the late 90s, he's back because these people don't pay attention to TNA. Sting is back and he's going to wrestle Triple H. That sells pay-per-views, man. That's massive.
I like that thought, Aubrey. I'll tell you why. And this is another thing that I've said a few times on this show. I don't remember when him and I talked about it, but Justin and I, for those that don't know Aubrey, and there's another show here on the network called The Place to Be Podcast. It's kind of the mothership show, and my PIC, Justin Rosero, and I do it. And a while back, I don't remember which episode it was. I mean, we've done over, 360-something. He said that, yeah, WrestleMania has now become more of a festival than one of the 12 pay-per-views. So partially go in thinking, oh, storylines will be advanced, but part of it is an attraction like the circus or a carnival or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. You enjoy it, you like it, and then the next night on Raw, we get back to the diehards, the IWC, and the nerds get back to business.
Well, I mean, look at it this way. If you're a diehard, if you're one of us, you're buying WrestleMania no matter what.
Right.
WWE would have to work really hard to convince us four weirdos not to buy WrestleMania. Precisely. In fact, we already have the network, so they already have their money. It doesn't even matter if you watch it.
Exactly.
Or not, right?
Like, I mean, I think that's part of the point, too. I think that's
So no wonder they're actually gunning for the casual fans. And that's why Raw's felt kind of like it's spinning its wheels the past few month, I guess, is because we already know what the matches are. And the matches all kind of sell themselves. It's John Cena, the Ultimate American, versus the Russian guy. It's these two guys from the late 90s. They're facing each other for the first time. It's the UFC fighter versus like the hot new prospect that's related to The Rock somehow. Like, it's
Hold on. I'm sorry to interrupt you, brother. It's just when you say the hot new prospect, that's WWE talk right there. Because the reality is, man, that dude's getting booed out of the building. And there's
I might blow your mind right now, but these guys aren't actually fighting. They're not actually fighting. It's all scripted, right? So if WWE says somebody's the hot new prospect, guess what? They kind of are, because it's a fictional television show.
You know
what's
funny, Will?
I completely disagree with that line of thinking.
I gotta tell you though, last couple weeks, I can't believe I'm about to say this either. Last couple weeks on Raw, the boos have kind of vanished a little.
Not on Monday night.
I don't know, Will.
There's some boos coming out of your TV set.
I think you're looking for the boos, maybe. But
I wasn't looking for him because last Monday, when was the last Moon Day?
Sometimes this show is on the moon, but
I know, man. Last Monday, you're absolutely right. The boos had died down, just like the chance for Daniel Bryan have died down being in that silly ladder match, you know.
Oh, I love it. I love this though. So, and this is a perfect example of like kind of the weird rhetoric, like tricks that like IWC stuff plays, right? Because you're blaming Daniel Bryan's getting booed, but that's not Daniel Bryan's fault.
I'm not saying Daniel Bryan's getting booed. I'm saying Daniel Bryan lost his pop when he came back and returned, and then when he went into the Rumble, he was the hottest baby face in the company, bar none, upon his return. Then he gets beat by Wyatt, wins and losses matter. Then he gets dumped from the Rumble. Then he gets beat at Fastlane, you know. And I'm sorry, man, but the reactions he's getting now, the last 2-3 weeks, are not the reactions he was getting 2 months ago.
I don't think he's lost the fanfare. I think the fans are just biding their time.
And yeah, I think the fans
are too busy popping for Reigns when he comes out. And when they hit
that was not Durner, a pop on Monday night. Y'all are sick.
You hear a sustained high-pitched pop every single time.
But speaking to Will's point of view, you know, you get the idea maybe the fans are biding their time for WrestleMania when the hardcore fans all flocked into the stadium and they just boo Reigns out of the building, but we just don't know until you get there.
Because Aubrey, according to all reports on house shows, Reigns is massively over. It's all cheers. You know, when the families and the kids and the wives are there at the house shows. Supposedly, it's all cheers. Dude, Monday night, when him and Brock did that silly tug of war and he came out, he was not getting cheered.
He was getting cheered, but not like the house show cheers. But that ending sucked.
It was a very flat ending.
When he walked out, he got the Pavlovian pop, followed by a long.
I love how it's Pavlovian when you don't agree with it. Right?
No, like, I call it Pavlovian.
It's something that doesn't fit in with your anti-Reigns thing. It's
I'm not anti-Reigns. I'm pro-Reigns. I'm pro-Shield. You know what I mean? I'm an observer. I'm observing something. I observe a guy that they're pushing as this thing, right? You know, to me, I'm already over the Daniel Bryan thing. You know what I mean? I already accept, and it's not the first time they did it. We looked back at old WrestleManias. They have a habit of pushing guys who headline manias, mainly heels, but a couple of faces like Chris Benoit from 20 to 21 or Bret Hart from 10 to 11, of pushing guys back down the ladder. You know, so what they're doing with Bryan isn't anything new, except that Bryan was hugely over. And that they didn't even plan for a main event program for your most over baby face. That's depressing.
I got an interesting.
But with Reigns, to me, it's not about pushing Reigns. it's the way they pushed him, you know, making him do these fake promos. When if you watch him on Conan the other night, the guy's so charismatic.
When was the last time you did a fake promo? Everybody brings that up. There's the Jack and the Beanstalk one. What promo in the past 3 weeks has been fake and awful?
They haven't let him talk as nearly.
He's
as
been
long
great.
As he,
they have let him talk. He's
yeah,
been great.
That's not true. Will, that's not true, man. Since Royal Rumble, he's had plenty of time to talk. He's done the sit down interviews. Yes, he's done a lot more sit down stuff. No, he had the verbal joust with Heyman a couple weeks ago where he came out and took over. Like, look, I'm pretty much Switzerland on this one, guys, because I see both of your points of view. On one hand, I love the fact that they're putting their ball with somebody new. On the other hand, I agree that I would have loved to see Reigns get another year to kind of marinate and gone with someone else. But call a spade, the guy is a good talker when he's not being given shit to do, when they let him be himself. And I think,
yeah,
you know,
they let him be himself, right?
Yeah, and I think they've been doing that lately. I think ever since the night after the Rumble, where they had the, you know, the Snow Day Raw, they've been moving back towards his original character as much as he can. I think there's a lot of merit to the fact that some fans are going to boo him no matter what, because he's the guy that WWE is pushing. And there is a certain, you know, I know Triple H said this on the podcast, on the Austin podcast, there is a certain segment of WWE fans who, whoever is getting the big push, they're not going to be down with it because he's the establishment guy. And I think Reigns, the guy can't help but be an establishment guy. He's not Daniel Bryan. He's not the everyman. But by the same token, just because he's a big, good-looking dude who can go out there and kick ass and talk when he wants to, you know, that doesn't mean he can't be a success. So,
well, that's the thing. I mean, you know who else is a big, good-looking dude who gets split reactions from the audience? Ben Morse. John Cena. John Cena, he makes a few bucks for the company, right? Exactly. Love him or hate him, he makes a lot of money for WWE.
You know who made a lot
He's
more?
Been the biggest...
Guys who didn't get split reactions like Hogan, Rock, Savage, Austin.
It's an entirely different time now, and if those guys were around now, the internet would hate Hogan.
You know who didn't
the same
get a split reaction last John year? Cena. Daniel Bryan.
John Cena is arguably a bigger star than those guys you listed. He's been on top for longer, selling out arenas and drawing in crowds all the time.
Here's the difference, man. Here's the difference with John Cena. John Cena continues to get the split reactions to the point that it's almost like part of his character.
Part of his
show. The thing is, though,
he's not selling out arenas like Austin or Rock. That is,
I get that. I get that. But the thing is, John Cena had to go through that baptism by fire with the split reactions where people really didn't believe he was going to be the guy that the company believed in because the fans didn't want him to be, but the company stuck with him anyway.
Right.
Also, is Roman Reigns going to be that guy for the next 3 or 4 WrestleManias? Again, we don't know, but it might
also
happen.
Also, people booing Cena, they're not booing Cena. They're not. They're cheering Cena in a different way. Honestly, I mean, like it's a strange thing, but the people who actually go into the arenas and get Cena sucks chants going, if they really hated that guy, they wouldn't be glued to their seats every time he got into the ring.
Mm. Wow. Pretty awesome, guys. Very awesome. We haven't been this fired up since the last time Ben was on 12 years ago. Why don't we take a break? Let's all take a nice.
I want to do a show with Aubrey, man. Just me and Aubrey. One on one.
I'm not recording that. It's been awesome. Aubrey and Will and Ben and Reesh and me. Let's take a break. We come back. We'll continue the questions. We'll steer into some other topics and continue talking our WrestleMania preview. Episode 30 of the main event. More.
How heavy is a movie?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself as Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews, our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews, and WWE Network live watches. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including the main event, featuring a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, WrestleChat.net, Still Real to Us podcast with Jeff Peck, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on what we should be excited about in the world of wrestling today. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, as well as the twice-weekly Bauer Show, The Kings of Sport, featuring live audio wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., often visited by special guests from inside the world of sports, as well as the NBA Team podcast with Adam Murray and Andrew Reich for the deep dive into the world of pro hoops. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN's also the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats' RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net for their support.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN podcast network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber.
The Pro
lover.
Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
Welcome back, Police to Be Nation, to this exciting, electric episode of The Main Event. I'm Scott Criscolo, joined by Andrew Reich and Ben Morris, two of the Core Four. Will H., I'm going to talk about your shows in a moment, my friend. And our special guest, I want to make sure I can make sure I blow his name, Aubrey Sitterson.
That's me. What's happening?
I have to get used to all of your shows. But Ben, tell give us all his shows again.
Aubrey.
I'm letting Ben talk for you, Aubrey.
Do it, Ben.
Actually, Aubrey, you know, Aubrey does Straight Shoot, which, as he said, it's his live talk show that he does after Raw every week. But I want to turn it over to him because he's got a new project coming up that I told him he could definitely talk about on this show.
Thanks, man. Before I jump off Straight Shoot, though, just FYI, after Mania, we're live, too, with PWG World Champion Roderick Strong talking all about the show. And then the next night, after Raw, I'm live with a comic book artist that you might be familiar with, Ben, Ramon Villalobos. And
man.
Who's your hero? Chris Hero, coming on immediately after Raw on Monday. So I'm very excited about that.
Oh, very cool.
Big nice. Things happening.
Chris.
Then Thursday, March 26th, so I mean probably today when you're listening to this, I've got a new podcast launched. It's called Scald, S-K-A-L-D. You can go to AubreySitterson.com or scald.podomatic.com for details. But it's like an ongoing serialized fantasy narrative. I'm writing these stories, one each week, or chapters of a long overarching story, and then I'm telling them. It's like a spoken word type thing. And so that starts up this week too. Very exciting.
It's like Robert Durst, only he can fly.
I don't get that reference. I was trying to be polite. That's the Jinx guy?
Yes.
Okay, so no, I mean, there are no wealthy, insane murderers in Skald yet. But it's early goings. Who knows what can happen? No, it's like a fantasy thing. So it's like a Conan or Elric kind of sword and sorcery, ballsy fantasy story. Cool. Yeah, I'm very excited about it.
Cool. All right. Well, definitely. So go to AubreySitterson.com or Skald, S-K-A-L-D.com. And where again can we find your show?
Oh, the show also, everything's at AubreySitterson.com.
Okay.
Or you can go to YouTube and YouTube.com/C/StraightShoot or just search for Straight Shoot or iTunes and Stitcher or Podomatic.
Podomatic. Never heard of
audio only one.
That's cool. Let's also talk about PlaceBNation.com, of course, your home for everything pop culture. Will, my man, the two-parter.
Sir.
Goodwill Wrestling, two-parter. Bad booking in WrestleMania history. Part two went up today. You, Pete, Dave. Discussed Manias 16 through 30.
Yeah, well, we did all 30 Manias.
Well, no, I know. Part one was 1 through 15.
Right, and then we did this. My goal this week was to have a podcast out every day leading up to WrestleMania, and so we did that. We did a preview, mm-hmm. a proper preview, you know. I like this format, man. A lot more interaction doing this. But you know, we did the typical preview. Then we're gonna run down the guys who could claim the title Mr. WrestleMania. So look for that. And we also did WrestleMania versus Starcade, which should be out tomorrow.
Oh,
we
look
at like
fun.
The first I think 12 Starcades or 11 Starcades, first 10 WrestleManias, and just kind of compare which was the best show of the bunch, which shows we preferred, which ones were the worst shows, that kind of thing.
Oh, awesome.
And also, we also did where we booked our Super WrestleMania, where we took our favorite WrestleMania matches and made a super card. So all of that on the Place to Be Nation.
Oh, that's excellent. So you can check that out on PlaceToBeNation.com. The staff also did their definitive WrestleMania rankings. And today they posted 20 through 16, and we'll have all the way to 1 by Sunday. My PIC, Mr. Rosero, posted a nice article. 22-1 or 21-2. The future of WWE collides with its past at WrestleMania 31, talking about Taker and Bray Wyatt. And of course, we'll talk about them a little bit in this second segment as well. Glenn Butler had his Wednesday walk around the web, the Wrestling Culture podcast, and as mentioned, the preview there as well. The Bauer Show came up, their 100th, Death and Deal Makers. And one of my favorite Ring of Honor guys was on this week's edition of the Kevin Kelly Show, Moose. Love that guy.
Love Moose.
Saw him live Rumble weekend. He rocks. So check it out. PlaceMeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Also, this week's edition of The Extra Point, the doctor and I had Joel Barnhart on, and we previewed the 2015 Major League Baseball season. So check that out as well. PlaceMeNation.com. All right, let's dive back in. We had a lot of fun first segment. Got fired up. I like that. We're all friends here. It's okay to yell about wrestling. It's what we all do.
Or so we say.
Or so I say. So, all right. Next one, and who's not gotten an original? Ben, I didn't ask you one yet. All right.
I can't say.
All right. Well,
it's like I'm still not here.
For a minute, I forgot you were on.
Yeah.
JD, let me ask you. No.
God, bastard.
No. Jesus, if he was on, this would be a whole shit show. No. Several of the big matches this year avoided having their participants against each other in matches or lead-ups. Some guys were on some week, some guys weren't. Could that be a positive or negative sign of booking for the future, keeping people separate to create hotter feuds? Or is it just a result of using guys who just aren't there? Or do you think this is a booking scheme that could be used in the future?
It's a hard booking scheme to use on a regular basis, considering how much television you got to fill, how many pay-per-views you got. I think we're a long way away from the days where guys, you know, don't have any physical contact until a pay-per-view. But hey, it's a nice side effect of having some of these part-time guys or having some of these attractions, some of these legends, is that you can go into WrestleMania and really be anticipating when Bray Wyatt and Undertaker or Sting and Triple H or Roman and Brock actually lock up for the first time. I think it's a cool effect, but do I think it's going to become the norm? No, I mean, it can't. That's not even a opinion question. That's just logic. When you have 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, network programming, and a pay-per-view, or whatever we're calling them this week, every
specials
month. Yeah, every month you're not going to have hands-off booking all the time, but it's good to know that the template's there and you can use it when it's appropriate, like any other storytelling trope, like any other method they use for wrestling booking. It's something that's good to go back to.
Okay. Will, any thoughts?
No, I think I wish they would use it more for big matches, mm-hmm. you know, during the year, you know, I think it's a, you know, if two guys, if you build up the anticipation of two guys never being able to get the better of the other, you know, it's going to make you want to see that match more. And I remember that first Brock Cena match, you know, where they just had some nasty pull apart brawls right before the Extreme Rules match.
Extreme Rules 2012. Yeah.
Oh man, I was amped for that. You know, that was,
well, he bloodied Cena's mouth. Remember, that was one of my favorite Cena moments of all time. Is when, remember, he smiled and he had that sick bloody teeth and everything. That was actually one of Cena's cooler moments. Let's see, Aubrey.
Yes, sir.
Who steals the show Sunday? Single person, not match. What single guy steals the show Sunday? Not match, just the one guy.
All right. Because I know my match. I have my match answer ready to go. Mm-hmm. I think it's it's gonna be Luke Harper. I had to pick a single guy, I wouldn't choose that match. I don't know if we're going to talk about that later, but I wouldn't choose that match to steal the show. I think it's going to be an amazing bonkers match. But the reason I say Luke Harper there is that I love a ladder match, and I love when guys do crazy, insane stuff off of the ladders and, like, you know, doing all the acrobatic and high-flying stuff. But I also love when there's just a big bruiser to serve as the base and then use the ladders as just clubs and climb up the ladder and get the title. And I think that Luke Harper, as long as his knee's okay, that looked nasty, whatever happened to him on Monday night. But I haven't heard anything about it, so I'm fingers crossed.
No, I haven't seen anything about him getting hurt either, yeah.
So I'm hoping he's all right. You know, as long as that guy's okay, I think he's really going to impress people with the fact that he can be the big bruiser, but he can also do kind of more of the aerial stuff, right? That guy does suicide dives and things. So I think Luke Harper is going to be the guy that everybody sort of sits up and takes, especially casual fans who maybe aren't as familiar with Luke Harper, are going to sit up and take notice of this dirty, disgusting, balding man just beating the bejesus out of everybody else.
What was the pay-per-view where Ziggler and Harper had their ladder match?
TLC.
TLC.
TLC, yeah. That pay-per-view, man, was not a big Ramon versus HBK flyer match. That was two guys just throwing ladders at each other's faces. That was a great kind of like a old school brawl that just happened to have a ladder in it. And I'd love to see more of that from Harper.
Okay. I'll give a weird answer on this one.
This is one I'm going to go around the horn because this is this is a good quickie answer one. Well, so Ben, go ahead.
I just tagged myself in, so I'm going to go.
Tag yourself in. Two heels.
I think Damian Mizdow is going to steal the show, and the reason why is completely different from the answer Aubrey gave because it's not from a workweight perspective. It's not that. I do think guys like Harper are really going to put in the work and impress people. I think Mizdow has for months been getting these insane pops from kind of the standard wrestling crowds. But I think his story and his thing with Miz, it's such basic booking 101. It's such basic wrestling. It's such like, this is a thing everyone can relate to. Same as Million Dollar Man and Virgil. You know, one guy is well-meaning and the other guy's a jerk and he's holding them down. If Mizdow can go into a stadium and whether he wins the Battle Royal or not, and I think there's a good shot he might, if he can just get a pop like he's been getting from that huge WrestleMania crowd and actually pulls the trigger on the babyface turn, I think he's made. If he, and you know, we can argue, sure, Cesaro got that pop last year and stuff happened, blah, 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 but I'm not going to focus on that. I'm looking forward and I'm positive. And I'm thinking if Mizdow gets the kind of pops he's getting amplified by the WrestleMania crowd, goes in with momentum to that crazy Raw after Mania, and just keeps going, I think he could end up stealing not just the show, but carve out a nice little niche for himself.
Okay. Will?
I have two answers, one with the caveat. If Seth Rollins cashes in the Money in the Bank, you know, this is his Mania. Okay. Yeah.
That's a good answer.
provided him and Orton have a good to great match. Okay. I like Randy Orton better as a babyface anyway, so I have high hopes for that match. However, my other answer, regardless if he wins or loses, is John Cena. You know, we just talked about John Cena getting his booze or whatever. One thing that hasn't been mentioned, and they've alluded to this, you know, Brock Lesnar did in his little promo where he knocked John Cena back to the mid card, or knocked him out of the main event. You know, John Cena hasn't been a main event in WrestleMania since what, 29? So for 2 years running, you know, I think he has something to prove. Yep. I think, you know, if he wins the match, he's supposed to win the match, right? He beats the big Russian. I don't think that does as much for John Cena if he loses, but I absolutely believe that him and Rusev are going to go out there, beat the shit out of each other, and make everybody take notice that, you know, John Cena is one of the, and this is where I will never dispute with Cena. I dispute that the way they use him. I've never disputed him as a talent. This is where he goes and reinforces that he's one of the biggest, big time players the company has ever seen when it comes to big matches that people will walk out of the stadium remembering his match. I got that feeling in 2007. I was there for the John Cena versus Umaga last man standing match at Royal Rumble 2007. Had no idea that match was going to be as crazy as it was. And you walked out of that arena remembering that match. Hmm. You know, and I think Cena and Rusev are going to do the same here.
Okay. Reesh?
Well, I think most of the people are going to be going in wanting to watch the main event and maybe Sting versus Triple H. So if they're great, they can't steal the show because people expected it, I guess you could say. I kind of like Will's answer about Rollins. That would be mine.
You think people expect Triple H versus Sting to be great?
Well,
I do. I certainly
do. They're going in expecting it to be an epic encounter. So people want to watch it, is what I meant by that. You know, and Lesnar is the star attraction. So if he's great, it'll be like the Royal Rumble match where it's like, well, we knew it was going to be great because he's Brock Lesnar and he's awesome. Rollins being great in the Royal Rumble match was a surprise. And I feel like he's been building a lot of momentum since then. I love the stuff he did with Jon Stewart. And I think the match with Orton is kind of pegged to be one of those kind of 20-minute to 17-minute matches that could really be great if they do it just right. And not only is he going to steal the show, he might steal something else.
Our hearts?
That too.
I thought he already did that. Okay. Let's see. Ben,
you know what? As long as it's out there, Scott, let's talk about Sting Triple H for a sec. I mean, I know we got a question for it, but just because, you know, I feel like the point just got dropped there. Obviously, some of us have one opinion, some of us have another opinion. I'm curious, you know, I think Will obviously is looking forward to it as anyone else. I'm going to say this for Sting Triple H, picking up on, you know, what Aubrey and Reesh have already said. If you watch Sting in TNA for the last 10 years, he had some good matches, but there was a lot of matches that weren't so great. But the thing that distinguishes Sting from other guys of his age bracket and other guys, you know, who work as much as he is that I don't think there was ever a match in TNA, a quote-unquote bad Sting match, that was bad because Sting was dogging it. Right. I think specifically back to, I remember watching Bound for Glory in 2009, and at that point, Sting was already, you know, he was already feeling it. He was already starting to talk about retirement. And he had a match against AJ Styles where it ended up being a pretty good match that you couldn't help but think, man, if this was Sting in his prime, it would have been amazing, because what it was 20 minutes of Sting working his ass off trying to keep up with AJ Styles. And that was an impossible task because Sting could not work AJ Styles type of match at that age in that type of condition. But the point is, whether he was in there with AJ Styles, whether he was in there with Bully Ray, Bobby Roode, Sting worked his ass off to keep up with these guys. At the end of the day, it was hard because of your young talents. They don't necessarily know how to do it. Triple H is a guy who is going to it's not only just going to let Sting keep up with him, he's going to help him. Triple H is a guy who knows how to structure a match like that. He knows how to put on a good match. I know, you know, Will, I know you got your issues with Triple H, but, you know, you look at what he did with Daniel
Bryan.
Not
as much as my buddy Dylan, but yeah.
You look at what he did with Daniel Bryan last year, you look at the last few matches. Triple H knows better than anybody how to structure a match, how to do the rudimentary just putting together. Sting is a guy who works up to the level of who he's working with. If you look at how he looked on Monday and the Monday before when he was just in the t-shirt as opposed to how he looked when he came back at Survivor Series, you can tell this guy's been busting his butt in the gym, in the ring, wherever. So that's why I think this is going to be a good match, because I think Sting has never stopped trying since he left WCW. I think the only problem has been he's been in there with a bunch of guys who are 20 years younger than him, doing moonsaults, doing flips. Put him in there with Triple H, a veteran, a guy who can work to his strengths, who can make him look good. I think absolutely it's going to be a great match. And I think, you know, when you put aside the Sting's old, Sting's fat, Triple H is a dick, all this other stuff, put aside the superficial stuff and just look at it from a logical perspective, I don't know how you can argue that this has potential to be a classic.
And I think the naysayers are using the cliche wrong because they're saying, well, can Sting go in the ring? Well, no. The question is, can Sting go in the ring for 20 minutes? And the answer is yes. You know, I've seen
really?
It before. Yes.
When?
I've seen it at TNA.
When in the last 5 years? Like what match?
The last 5 years.
No,
because
I really need to search out these great 20-minute Sting matches from TNA.
Well, Ben mentioned one with AJ Styles. He had some great ones with Kurt Angle. He does definitely need a really good wrestler to go with him. And like Ben said, it's a good fit because Triple H is a ring general. Sting, even in his early days, has been great at adapting to what other people do. You know, he's fought little guys, big guys, medium-sized guys. He's been able to do great matches with all those different people throughout his career. In the late stages, have the great matches been kind of dispersed a little farther apart from each other? Yes. But I think for just that one time, if he's really motivated and if Triple H doesn't
and I think he's
try
always motivated.
To take over
That's
it,
my point.
The match, yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, a couple things, right? The first one is that this it might be – it'll probably be like a 20-minute match or so. I hope so. I hope it's that long. But it's not going to be a 20-minute work rate match, right? It's going to have a lot more in common with The Rock versus Hogan, right? Like, and that is, I think, unequivocally – a fantastic match. It's a fantastic wrestling match, even though there's not a whole lot of wrestling in it, right? And that's what's brilliant about both Sting and Triple H's workers is I think they can elicit that kind of response from an audience without doing a whole lot. I don't think they're going to need to do a whole lot. I think they're going to end up doing more than we maybe expect them to do, which is going to make it even better. Here's the big thing for me, though, right? This cannot be a bad match. It will not. And I'll tell you some reasons why. One, Triple H and Sting will not allow it to be a bad match because it's Sting's first match in WWE ever. It's at WrestleMania. It's Sting's first WrestleMania. Triple H doesn't have a whole lot of matches each year. Every match Triple H does, it matters, right? And it's been that way for the past couple of years. These guys are not going to go – they're always amazing. Yeah, they're not
really?
Always good. Yeah.
You thought the Brock Lesnar Triple H match at 29 was amazing?
I was in the crowd. Yeah, I was worn out on it. I wish that Brock Lesnar was facing somebody else that night, right? Because I just knew he had limited dates. But no, I think those guys had a great match. I think that every match that Triple H has at this point is great. He's not going to let the one WrestleMania match against Sting suffer. Here's the other reason it's going to be amazing, and it can't not be great. Who does Triple H idolize? Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm.
Ric Flair, who is Sting's greatest opponent. Sting, arguably, Ric Flair's greatest opponent. Triple H, all he needs to do to have amazing matches with Sting is go back and watch those Ric Flair tapes and figure out what pieces of that he can adopt to his in-ring persona, and it's going to be phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. And one
can
more
I go,
point.
Can I go now,
yeah,
Scott?
No, I want you to do the flip side in a sec, Will. Because I think you got to present the counter to this argument. But one more in defense of, before we move on to the prosecution, is that, and this was another point Austin made on his show the other day, was that Sting's a lifelong babyface. He's not the guy who should be calling the match in the ring. And I'm going to say this because this is why I think a lot of his TNA work suffered. As the veteran, by far, he was relied upon to call a lot of those TNA matches. He's a better follower than he is a leader. And you know Triple H is a guy who's going to lead this match. That said, Will for the prosecution.
I have one more thing before Will
okay,
goes.
Sorry. hold him back, man.
Because as the host, that's my job. An epic encounter does not have to be a 5-star work rate gem. And the number one example of that is easily indisputable is Hogan Andre. Hogan Andre is easily one of the greatest main events in the history of professional wrestling, and the match was maybe 2 stars. But who gave a shit? At least if you're going to define epic encounter, epic
right.
main event, you don't have to have Flair Steamboat at Clash
well, one,
6.
This, I was alive. You were alive back then, Scott. These youngsters, they were still in
these
diapers.
Little tykes.
Yeah, they were still in
1987,
diapers.
1987, man.
You little tykes. That's right. Well, all right, Will, go ahead.
They were right out of diapers.
All right, Will, go ahead.
This is no Hogan Andre, okay?
Well, no, but I'm just saying that epic, okay. If you're going to
yeah,
the
these
term
guys
epic encounter.
Andre
yeah.
Well, that's true, too.
Well, Andre's
yeah.
in a battle royal.
These guys are going to have a more active, higher work rate match. It's not Hogan
No, in terms of importance, in
yeah.
terms of hype, in terms of build, this doesn't even come close.
No, but all I was saying was, that's not what I was alluding to.
Well,
either.
I look at wrestling completely different from most people, you know, because I keep hearing things like flips, moonsaults, movement. To me, that's never been what wrestling's about anyway. It's been about logic. It's been about doing things that make sense. You know what I mean? And to me, that's kind of like Triple H's fallacy. He doesn't always do things that make sense. Like wrestling a 20-minute match against Scott Steiner at Royal Rumble and letting Steiner get blown up. Okay, you're the ring general. You're the leader. Well, no, he went out and took a hit on Steiner. You know, say this guy's in our league, and Steiner wasn't. But he could have, if he wanted to have a great match, he could have had like a fight. I think if he wants to have a great match with Sting that's still epic, you do a lot of plunder, you do a lot of sports entertainment type stuff.
Do you think that the click is inspiring to make this a bad match? Be honest. The click is together backstage.
Man, that would be awesome, man. Nash hobbling out as he tears his quads.
Do you think this is a big conspiracy by the click to hold down Sting?
No, I don't. Well, one, I don't think Sting's ever been as great of a wrestler as y'all claim he was. Okay, that's for and two, his best opponent was Vader, not Flair. But I've watched Sting in TNA. You know, I don't see the greatness, and it's not about moving. It's not about moving up. It's partially bad booking because Vince Russo had a lot to do with TNA in those years. Completely turned me off. But part of it is I don't think he puts on exciting matches. I don't think that he does the right things. I think he wants to get his things in. He's going to get a stinger splash in. He's going to tease the sharpshooter. Whether he works on the guy's leg or back or not, it doesn't matter. He's still going to, you know, put that sharpshooter on. He's going to, tease the death drop. And Triple H, to me, is completely hit or miss. You know, I thought last year's match with Daniel Bryan, complete hit, absolutely. I thought the Lesnar match the year before, complete miss. Not the way that match should have worked. And he shouldn't have gone over. You know, if you're building Lesnar up as this monster, then make him a monster. He should have taken the fall there. I was there for the Taker match for 28, the Hell in the Cell. Great match, except there is no reason to have a cell. You know, if you're going to have a Hell in a Cell, have a reason for the cell. You know, to me, that's not the smartest thing as a wrestler to actually have a gimmick that you don't really use in the entire match. You know, they didn't need the cell. So to me, that doesn't show that he's one of the smartest guys out there. And I don't think he has amazing matches. Once you say Triple H has amazing matches and that's an indisputable fact, I can't argue with you because there's no way I'm going to change your mind. You know what I mean? Can they have an epic match? Absolutely. But I don't think it's going to be at Rock Hogan levels, because the thing that made Rock Hogan special was not the fact that Rock and Hogan were matching up, but that the way the crowd responded to Hogan.
Being in Canada helped that too.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's still the fact that they responded to him that way,
yeah.
And Rock had the sense mid-match to then start playing heel. You know, Rock healed it up. Mid-match, he came out babyface, I'm the Rock, do you smell what I'm cooking, all of that crap. But then once he says, hey, man, this crowd's kind of booing me, shit, I'm going to heal it up.
That's why,
you know,
I think
he doesn't
Rock,
ignore it. That's why he's so great.
And know? That's why I think Rock, and this is another debate for another day, but that's why I think Rock was picked to fight Hogan at 18 and not Austin, because I think Stone Cold would not have reacted to boos.
No, well,
as
well. Stone Cold turned the match down. He didn't want to do it.
Now, see,
Stone Cold what? Said it himself on his podcast.
Right.
He didn't want to do it. He didn't think that Hogan could go. He was being the
baby. Now, a lot of other people think that he's just saying that because it makes him look better when he got passed over
by Rock instead.
But that's another argument for another day.
Yeah.
I mean, we go round and round on this match. I think
I don't think so. I just want to get it that there is a point that made that I don't think it's a guaranteed hit.
Yeah.
I think both guys are going to get huge pops.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think they're going to receive massive reactions the minute the music starts up until the music ends. Where I'm going to disagree with you guys is how that crowd's going to react from the moment the bell rings till the moment the bell ends. That's where I disagree. I don't think both guys have it in them, especially Sting, to have a great match, even as great as Austin Hogan, because the dynamic's not there for an Austin Hogan encounter or an Andre Hogan encounter.
Okay.
I'm interested to see how it goes. I think there are points on both sides. I think there's a lot of good evidence that's been brought up from 2003.
Happy 2003.
What? Because every time we talk about Triple H, you bring up that Steiner match from 2003.
No, I don't. I've only talked about it twice. Once with Scott on his debate, and then this time. But it is. It's a case where this guy doesn't always do the right things.
Right.
Like, I didn't think him beating Lesnar was the right thing at all at 29. Right. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, it's scripted, right? Year. Like that. What, like,
well, you know, Aubrey.
Hold on, but the whole purpose of wrestling is that I'm not supposed to think it's scripted.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, we.
You know what I mean? I'm supposed to suspend my disbelief.
That's
if
true
I
too.
Can't do it on this match, then they failed.
Yeah.
Because it does feel scripted when a guy who has no business beating Lesnar beats him, then it feels scripted, and I feel like I am robbed of what I want from wrestling.
We're not talking about Triple H the Booker here. We're talking about Triple H the wrestling talent. You know, so yeah, the fact that you didn't like the finish of the match is
I actually disagree.
I'm telling you from bell to bell, I don't think Triple H is a good wrestler.
Okay.
Period. You know what I mean? That's why I said when you said he undisputably has great matches, I was like, wait a minute, I'll dispute that.
And yeah, you can look back, move by move.
But now we're just talking about what we personally like.
Yeah, you can look back to 2003 and find some bad Triple H matches. But yeah, in the past few years,
I find one every year actually. But I don't want to do that on this show. I'm just saying though, from bell to bell, you can't say undisputable because now we're just talking. Because like I said, I don't care about flips and moonsaults. You know, to me, that's not what makes a 5-star match. I don't even care how fast they go.
You can't say undisputable because it's not a word, but I want to.
Whatever,
I want to hear.
Whatever. I'm not an English major.
I make up words. Come on, Will Ben. I made up formatics, and that's now an official. That's
what
in
I say.
That's in the place to be lexicon now. So.
I'm sorry,
but I'm still. But I made it. But that's all right, Will, because I made up formatics, and that's indisputable. In undisputable formatics. Non sequitur. I use that too. Actually,
next question, please.
All right, Will. I'll give you this one.
We love them. What?
Is this it for Taker?
I hope so. I'm tired of him. I don't want to see him anymore.
Okay. Aubrey?
No. No. I mean, I think if they're going to write him off, in the time to do it was last year. I think if once you're going to bring him back without the streak, yeah, keep him coming back. I hope he doesn't do it past the point at which he's safe. But, you know, I think that guy still has more to offer. I think his match with Bray is going to take a lot less out of him than his match with Lesnar did. And I think that when, you know, some folks out there may be tired of him, but when that gong hits and he comes out at WrestleMania, I think all those folks are going to be kind of quiet.
Okay.
Hey, hold on. Sorry. I want to ask Aubrey a question here.
Lay it on me.
Okay. Did you think Brock Lesnar should have ended the streak last year?
Oh, I wasn't going to get into this, but that's okay.
You know what? When it happened, I was legit pissed off. I was too. I thought it was awful. And like, it's funny because I do, you know, I do these post shows. And so the WrestleMania post show last year, I was bullshit about it. I thought it was just the stupidest thing I'd ever heard. By Monday night, though, once I had seen everybody else be really, really upset about it, and I had people who hadn't watched wrestling in like 15 years calling and texting me to ask about it, I realized, no, this was the absolute right choice. This was an amazingly smart choice. And it turned Brock Lesnar and Heyman into the top heels in the country.
I think a lot of people, you know, it is, and I just want to say this. I just want to say this point, then I want to move on to keep the question going. But I think a lot of people got mad last year because they just think Brock Lesnar's a dick. You know, a lot of these things we discuss are just personal preferences. It's not a general right or wrong. If anybody else had broken the streak, if Sean broke the streak at 25, would we all be getting pissed off? Not really, because we like Sean.
I think people would have been pissed off.
People would have been legitimately pissed off.
They would have been like,
they would have been pissed off if Punk
broke it. They would have blamed on the click.
I would have loved if Punk broke it, to be honest with you.
People would have still been pissed off. You know, because there are people that feels it should have never been broken.
Well, that's true, too. But, all right. I
have another question I want to ask the panel later that has to deal with Triple H, Sting, Lesnar, and these guys. I'm sorry, Scott, but this I'm really interested in. I'm not even going to argue with anybody about this. Do you think it hurts the current roster to keep continuously going back to these part-timers or once-a-year guys for the big show?
No, it sells more tickets and puts more money in everybody's
pocket. Yeah, I think that answer, Will, goes back to what we were talking about earlier about WrestleMania being a specialty
an attraction.
1 year attraction for the not for the casual viewer. If you're a diehard, you kind of schluff your, you know, if it pisses you off, eh, whatever, you shake your shoulder.
Well, the only thing that pisses me off is that I think that it it just reminds you that the current guys aren't on the level of these other guys. You know,
it hurts them on their stature in terms of the WrestleMania card by itself. It doesn't do anything to them long term because those special attractions aren't around long enough to affect their spots.
But the other thing you got to remember is, I know we've gone back to it a couple times, but WrestleMania and WWE are different now than they were even 10 years ago, 20, or especially back in the Attitude Era, the Rock and Wrestling Era, where they had direct competition, where they didn't have this huge, massive stable of history to rely on. That, you know, it's a different model now. You have all these guys you can turn to. We didn't have part-time stars in 1997. If they did, Vince couldn't trust them because who knows, they're not going to go to WCW in 2 months. We're living in a world where all the guys who are worth bringing in part-time, WWE is the only company that can afford them, and they're going to keep going for it. It's not the same world that it was.
This is roster depth, too. People talk about roster depth all the time, right? Like, it's one of these buzzwords because Jim Ross uses it sometimes in his blogs, but this is roster depth. This is what it looks like. You've got some veterans, and, you know, I don't understand the thought of, like, the fear of, oh, well, you know, it brings up the fact that, like, there aren't guys at their level. Well, there are three part-timer matches. Two of them have the part-timers facing guys who debuted in the last 2 years. That's
this was a CM Punk argument, by the way. That's all I'm bringing up.
Yeah,
this
but I get kind of what Will is, you know, Will didn't really say his opinion about it, but the thing is, I can get the sense of kind of depression from the fans when you see a guy that's really, really worked hard, like a Dolph Ziggler, like a Luke Harper, like Aubrey was talking about, and then they kind of get pegged down, and it's like, okay, this is where you are, and that's it. But the point of it is, that's been WrestleMania for the last 10 or 11 years.
Yeah.
And we just have to learn to accept it.
Okay. Reesh, is this it for Taker?
You know, with the streak over, you know, the big question is, if he comes back, is it even worth it for Taker to wrestle anymore? Well, the answer is obviously yes, because he's wrestling Wyatt. I think he'll win this one, and I think next year in Arlington will be his last one.
Okay. Who did I ask? Ben, is this it for him?
It doesn't make any sense for him to go out on this story. When Undertaker goes out, there's going to be a much bigger build. There's going to be a much bigger mystique. I don't think there's any sense in having him necessarily lose to Bray. I know a lot of people have gone like, oh, if Undertaker comes back and he beats Bray, Bray's done. But no, man. I mean, it's Undertaker. He's a huge star. I think beating him 2 years in a row might make the sense of, well, what's the point bringing him back next year? But on the other hand, they could probably build a decent story about him losing to Bray and then having to take a year off to come back and beat him and then retire. But one way or the other, I don't think this is it for him. I would have been okay if he had been done last year, but randomly coming back for this match would not be the way to go out, I don't think.
Okay. Of the guy, I'm going to read off some names. Okay. These are the guys that are in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. Miz, Curtis Axel, Axelmania, Ryback, Fandango, the unbelievably over Adam Rose, Zack Ryder, who might be more than Adam Rose, Jack Swagger, Titus O'Neil, Darren Young, Big Show, Kane, Eric Rowan, Miz, Dow, Sin Cara, really, he's still with the company, Goldust, Heath Slater, Mark Henry, Connor Victor, and whoever wins the NXT WrestleMania Access Tournament, which most people think is going to be Adrian Neville because he's probably the next one to legitimately hit the roster. Of those guys, Reesh, I'll start this one with you. Who needs it the most?
All of them.
that's a good answer. That's a viable answer.
That's a viable answer. Sure. If I really had to just sneak one above all the others, this sounds horrible, but the Big Show. Because he's been losing for the last, like, what, 5 or 6 pay-per-views? He probably needs to win more than anybody else.
The Big Show's a guy who can lose as much as they want, and he'll always be threatening.
He needs to come back and beat somebody up a couple of weeks.
That's true. It's a lame answer, but I'll go with the Big Show.
Okay. All right.
I think it's a fine answer, Andrew.
I think it's a fine answer, Mr. Reesh. Benjamin, anybody need it more than anybody else?
Ryback.
The Big Guy.
He has somehow, against all odds, gotten hot again after, by all means, he should have been done. after WrestleMania 29 with that heel turn that didn't seem to go anywhere. The guy's a natural babyface, strangely enough. I didn't think he would be, but he is. He's clearly a natural babyface. Crowd's behind him. If they don't capitalize on him now, I think they pulled the trigger, or they failed to pull the trigger too many times. So I think he needs to win this.
Okay. Will, anybody more than somebody else?
Well, if you're debuting an NXT guy, hopefully that guy wins, you know, because it's hard to get behind a loser. I'm sorry, I don't agree with the idea that someone jobbing doesn't hurt somebody's status in the eyes of the fans.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with the NXT guy, whoever that is.
All right. Aubrey?
Yeah, first of all, I think wins and losses don't matter at all.
Wow.
While we're doing this.
That's an age thing, man. I come from an era where they actually did
that's
matter.
A great excuse whenever somebody disagrees with you. That's fantastic.
It's an age thing, bro.
Yeah, it's
different.
An age thing. You're just too old. You don't understand. Your mind's gotten soft.
Don't understand this horrible product that's soft. Out on here now.
So, I don't really know if anybody needs it per se, because I don't think it is anything, right? Last year, for instance, Cesaro won and it amounted to nothing because they didn't do anything with him afterwards, right? So I don't know. I don't know who really needs it. I'd like to see Ryback win it for much the same reasons that Ben said. Also, I'm a big Ryback fan. And I just think it would make sense with kind of where his character is at. And he has been kind of on the rise since Survivor Series and hasn't gotten stymied in the same way that Dolph Ziggler and Eric Rowan have. So, I'd like to see Ryback. But I don't know if winning this title or winning that trophy does nothing for anybody except for maybe give them an opportunity to push them Monday night.
I would say, I think I threw this on here. I don't think we'll get to it. I think if they're going to keep doing the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, which is cool, and I think it's, you know, I think it's a neat way to go to a lot of the guys on the card, make it for something more than just getting your name on a trophy. You know, you get a title shot. You get something to up the stakes a little bit. That's my opinion.
Okay.
That's a great point.
Okay.
Because then the win would mean something.
Right.
Good idea.
Let me find a good one here. Oh, here's a good one. We talked about him earlier. We really haven't said his name much tonight. And, Ben, I'll start this one with you. Based on what he's doing Sunday and what he could do for the rest of the calendar year, what should Randy Orton's role in the company be right now? Is he a star maker? Is he still a main eventer? What is Randy Orton's role in the company right now? Based on what happened Sunday and afterwards?
I think I came up with this question because I'm mostly fascinated by it. Randy Orton.
Yeah, you did do that.
Yeah,
one.
But no, Randy Orton. Randy Orton fascinates me just because, man, he's such a diamond as a performer. I think he nails it every time, no matter what he's doing, whether he's being a heel, whether he's being a babyface. But I also think he has trouble sustaining in any one thing. That's what you see. Like he'll change attitudes every so often. He'll go from being a title contender to being a star maker. He'll do all these different things. So I can't really figure Randy Orton out, because he's been with WWE for over a decade now. He does well in any position they put him in, and he could arguably be anything, but I don't know where up and down the card you slot him. I think he can fit anywhere, but at the same time, when he's in the middle of the card, I'm like, why isn't he in the main event? And then when he's in the main event, I'm like, man, that's a spot someone else should have. I am stymied. Stymied? Stymied?
Stymied.
You know stymied. The one. All right.
We're making words stymied. Up anyway. It doesn't matter.
I am stymied by Randy Orton, so I'd actually be curious to hear what everybody else thinks about where he should be, because I asked this because I genuinely don't know the answer.
Okay. Reesh, what do you think is Randy Orton's role should be in this company?
You know, like Ben was saying, you know, John Cena is like his brother in arms in terms of their careers. They parallel a lot, even though Cena has been more of the golden boy for WWE than Randy Orton has. The thing with Orton is that he's kind of evolving. You see what I did there? Evolution, huh? Okay. He's evolving into the same situation that John Cena is, and that's that he's kind of the gatekeeper. You know, he's the guy where a young guy comes in, you got to go, you know, it's like he says in his promos all the time, you know, you got to go through me if you want to get to the top, you know, and excuse me. And then you have like Stephanie had that weird promo with Cena when he was telling him, well, you can't be the champion. You got knocked out, so you can't be in my battle royal, blah, blah, blah. It was basically kind of a little nudge, nudge, wink, wink that John Cena is not going to be the champion probably going forward as much. He's more of a guy that kind of takes in the young guys,
performs against them and tries to test their mettle before they reach their way to the top. I think Randy Orton's in the exact same position, only they're not officially like putting a label on it. But it does feel like that with Orton, where you know he feuds with Rollins and then maybe he feuds with Reigns. But does that mean Orton's going to be the WWE champion ever again? Not exactly, but I think it's unlikely that he'll be in that position again. So I'd say that he's more of like, you were saying, a guy that kind of helps build other stars. And I think he's at a point in his career at his age where he can accept that.
Okay. Aubrey, what do you think?
You know, it's a bummer when I think about Randy Orton. And I think this is actually something that Will is going to appreciate, because it goes back to territory days, right? And Randy Orton, he's what, like 35? He's a little bit younger than Cena, right? Same I know?
I think so, yeah. They're close to the same age, but I think Orton is slightly younger.
This goes for both those guys, but we're talking about Orton right now. You know, in the territory days, he would just now be hitting his prime. Now would be the time that he would start getting that big
he's 34.
Title. Oh, wow, he's even younger than I thought. Shit.
He's 34.
Man, now I feel really bad for him. So, you know, now would be the time that he would really start hitting his prime, and they'd be like, okay, it's finally – he's ready. You know, he can have a great match with anybody. He can do something compelling in 8 minutes, or he can do something compelling in 45. He can do whatever we need. Now we can put the title on him and have him be the top guy in the company.
And since you referred to him, Cena's 37.
Okay, yeah. So Orton's a little bit younger, which makes this even sadder, right? Because instead, for a lot of reasons, it's not worth getting into right now. This isn't how wrestling works anymore. And that guy got pushed way too much, way too soon. So we got exposed to top of the card Randy Orton before he was at his peak. So right. Orton is just peaking now. Like it's crazy to me, and it bums me out momentously that Orton and Cena are both at their peaks as performers right now, and yet we're already exhausted with seeing them face each other.
Right.
That is so upsetting to me on a really profound level, because they're such great performers, and for us to already be tired of it, it's grim. And I feel the same way about Orton, his career as a whole, because that guy should be in the main event picture right now, but we're tired of it. And I think the best place for him kind of is a gatekeeper, unfortunately, which bums me out. Unless, of course, he were to go away to pull a Jericho, go away for a couple years and then come back.
Mm-hmm. I would chime in and disagree about the Cena being this prime. I think he's past that. But, you know, the thing with Orton and Cena is that did they need all those matches at the top of the card in which they faced elite performers in order to reach their peak and realize how good they could be? You know, I think Randy Orton needed that a little bit more than Cena did.
Cena's problem now is his body's just a pile
of
goo.
Not just that, his style is more in tune with, you know, you do it my way and you have to adapt to me. And I think that it's harder to have good matches in the later stages when you kind of rely on the same things over and over again. Randy Orton's kind of cool because he does a lot of different things, you know?
Okay. All right, Will, get a quick answer on this.
No, I can't and then I'm going to give answer, you a read. So I'm not going to give it.
Okay, good. Because you wanted time for your rebook, and I'm being fair, you asked, and I'm...
No. If I can give a long answer, I don't need to do the rebook if I can give a long answer to this Randy Orton thing.
Okay, give an answer.
All right, here's the deal. Who just said that Randy Orton's at his peak and Cena's a pile of goo?
Oh, I said...
My mind is soft, so I don't remember.
I said they're both at their peak. I think Reach said that.
I think
Cena's past his prime.
I think Cena's a pile of
goo. Yeah. I absolutely think y'all are nuts, because this was the same John Cena who just had a match of the year contender at the Royal Rumble, you know, and was in the entire match, unlike Brock Lesnar. I don't know. Cena's a guy who is going to go when the person across from him wants to go. And like I said, he's the big time performer. That's why I have no problem saying he's going to be the guy to steal the show, because you know, he's in the mid card. Now he has to prove I don't belong in the mid card. I belong in the main event. And Orton, I feel the exact opposite of. I'm tired of Randy Orton. I don't, like I said, as a heel, I don't believe he's vicious. And as a face, I like him when he's working, but I don't invest in him as a face. You know, I just don't. I don't see anything about him that makes me excited to say, okay, Randy Orton is now going to get his hands on Seth Rollins. Like, I really don't care. I just want them to have a good match. Mm. Whereas other guys, I hope they win. You know, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns. I'm really interested to see who wins that match. Mm-hmm. Randy Orton wins? Eh, okay. Rollins wins? Eh, okay. It's just, you know, wins and losses don't matter, right? But when, unless they do, like in Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's, I don't know. I don't think there's anything special about Randy Orton. I think that's been lost. In a way, Aubrey was right, you know? It's too bad that, you know, they were so young, but back in the territory days, you could work a smaller territory like Portland or Continental or something like that, not be seen by a national audience on Crockett or WWF right. before mm-hmm. you came up.
Right.
And, you know, here, well, they've been on national TV as long as anybody, you know, regardless of their age. You know, the ages may change, but the runs on national TV aren't really that different. So, you know, it's time for him to – who said he needed to go away for 2 years? Who said that?
That was me, I think. Yeah, like Jericho.
Yes, go away for 2 years. Go away for 2 years and come back completely revamped and maybe do what Jericho did and whether succeeds or fails, just try something completely different than the Viper.
Mm, okay.
Just something completely different.
Okay.
All right. Sorry about that.
All right. No, that was a good answer. All right. Before we go, we will do picks, but I'm just going to rapid fire. I'm going to pick a match, go around the horn. Whether you think the match sucks or not, the match itself will suck or not is totally irrelevant in this case. All right. Reese, I'll start with you. Orton Rollins, who wins?
Rollins.
Okay. Aubrey?
Orton.
Will?
I hope Rollins.
Ben?
Rollins.
Okay. Taker Bray? Will?
I hope Bray.
Okay. Ben?
Taker.
Aubrey?
Taker.
Reesh?
Undertaker.
AJ and Paige versus the Bellas? Ben, can you give me a quick answer, or are you going to tell me the whole season three?
Bellas.
Will?
I don't
and
care.
Who cares is not an answer.
Oh,
my rules, my
give
show.
Give Divas a chance. Will.
Pick a winner. My rules, my show. Pick a winner.
When Will was growing up watching the women, never mind.
Yeah. With Donna Christianelle. Yeah, Will and I had to deal with some pretty ugly women when we were back.
But
in
we
the
did
day.
Deal with the Jumping Bomb Angels. Who?
I love the Jumping Bomb Angels. Yeah. Right.
Bellas.
Bellas. Okay. Aubrey.
Bellas.
Breesh.
The winner is Urinals.
Can I ever get an answer?
AJ, give us a chance over here, man. I'll answer for him. Bellas.
Okay. Rusev, Cena, Ben.
Cena.
Will.
I hope it's Rusev.
Aubrey.
Wah, 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 Cena.
Breesh.
John Cena.
Ladder match for the Intercontinental title. Will.
Hopefully it's Daniel Bryan.
Aubrey.
Harper.
Breesh.
Dolph Ziggler.
Ben.
Daniel Bryan.
R-Truth. Oh.
Oh, man.
All different answers, right?
R-Truth doesn't count.
I don't want R-Truth as Intercontinental Champion. I want R-Truth as regular commentator on Raw.
Yes.
Yeah. Scott, did you have a different answer from any of us four?
Stardust.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I think it'd be cool to have like a belt strap with stars
that's
on it.
That's five different answers.
Oh, wow. No, I think two of us picked Bryan.
Yeah, me and Will.
Oh, okay. Bryan. I'm sorry.
But all right, battle Bryan and I said Daniel. So.
All right, Battle Royal. Aubrey.
Oh, Ryback, big guy.
Will.
Mark Henry, always.
Oh, can I take mine back? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Surprise entrant, Sheamus.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about him. I don't feel like talking about him anymore. Will, you said Mark Henry. Reesh?
John Gruden's favorite wrestler, Ryback.
Ben.
Ryback.
Okay. Sting, Triple H. Ben.
Sting.
Will.
Triple H.
Aubrey.
Stinger.
Reesh.
Sting. You know I was going with Sting.
I'll do it. That four-way tag. Tyson Kidd, Cesaro, Los Matadors.
Swerve. Wow, I didn't know it was going this late in the show.
New Day, because I forgot. That's why. New Day and the Usos. Will.
Cesaro Kidd.
Reesh.
Usos.
Aubrey.
Kidd and Cesaro retain.
Ben.
Cat facts.
Brock Reigns. Don't think of cashings in or anything. I'll get to that in a minute. Brock Reigns, straight up. Ben.
Brock.
Will.
Reigns.
Reesh.
The Beast.
Aubrey.
Reigns. The big dog, as I call him.
Okay. And
as
finally.
As his buddies call him.
Finally, is there a Rollins cash in? Aubrey.
No.
Will.
No.
Reesh.
Yes.
Ben.
No.
That is our WrestleMania preview, gentlemen. It has been one of the most unique, electric, I like that term tonight.
Contentious.
I was going to say that.
But that's okay, though. Because, like Aubrey said, I mean, it's fun. It's okay to debate.
Did I say that?
Well, no, you kept saying it's fake.
You may have 2 hours.
Fake is the same thing.
I think it was Corey Live when I said it was fun.
Yeah. Let's all have a good time, guys. We're all going to watch it. Whether we hate everything or not, we're not going to be like these other posers. We're going to admit, we're going to watch it Sunday. Whether we're pissed off or not, we're going to watch it. So let's enjoy it as best we can. Will there be a reaction show?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. But I don't know. I don't get pissed off at wrestling anymore.
No, I don't either.
I don't care enough.
Let's enjoy it. And let's enjoy the great Hall of Fame and everything that goes this weekend. Hopefully Ring of Honor does well Friday night. Guys, thank you. Will, always a pleasure to have you on, my friend. And continue your shows this week.
We're going to do some more Nitros coming up, right?
I believe so. Yes. Yes. There should be some Nitros coming up. Aubrey, thanks for popping in.
Great, hey, I had a blast. Performance. Thanks for having me.
We will have you back on in the future. You are now permanently in the rotation. Reesh, you're the man. Talk to you on the extra point down the line. We'll talk a little NBA playoffs probably. I'd have you on with our man Grant Hughes. And Benjamin, welcome back. I'll see you in six months.
12 weeks, Scott.
Yeah. Yeah, see you in 6 months.
Yep.
When you go to Botswana or something. Guys, enjoy rest and fans, and hope you enjoyed the show and enjoy WrestleMania. For Reesh, for Ben, for Will, for Aubrey, I'm Scott. Regardless of what happens in the main event, enjoy WrestleMania. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey, Scott, when your mind goes soft, will you let me take care of you at your house?
Yes, Reesh. Now go get me some chicken a la king.
See, we have this thing called a VCR. And
that's my clothes, dude!